Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the Broth Lady, or the inventor of the hashtag More Vegetables Than a Vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size, and self-love, and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Not quite that time yet, Sarah.
And a Happy New Year.
We're getting there.
I was just feeling festive.
It's creeping up so fast. You know, there's like a week less than usual between Thanksgiving and Christmas this year.
Oh, that explains it. I have been feeling so like, oh, like I'm normally way more organized by this time of year. And I've just been like, okay, like I don't even have ideas.
So last,
let alone parcels half put together and ready to, you know, bring to the post office. Like,
yeah, last year was super early, but then it like flipped on the calendar to like the next 7 week phase. So it's coming a week later this year instead of earlier or something.
That explains my disorganization.
So you had way more time last year than you did this year.
But we did get most of our like decorations up on the weekend, and I saw that you did your annual chopping down of trees funness with the family. Did you go to the same tree farm as normal, or did you try a new one this year?
We tried a new one, and we were very, very pleased with it. I think we will continue to go back there. We went to a place called Middleburg Tree Farm for those in the Northern Virginia or surrounding areas. And we ended up getting a kind of tree that I've never seen or heard of before called conifer fir, and it's got long needles, but they're really soft, and so it's like a Douglas fir meets a blue, what do they call those blue ones? I forget. Anyway, they basically like hybridized the softness of the Douglas fir with the other tree that everybody loves that's like bluish and has long needles. And what's really great is that Matt has like a pine allergy. Well, he's got like all kinds of allergies, but the one that like is residual after going paleo is a pine allergy. Like when he actually touches pine or pine trees touch him, it gives him a rash.
Ooh.
And this tree did not bother him. Now, granted, he was wearing long sleeves and gloves, but he always wears long sleeves and gloves and still gets rashes and didn't break out from the tree.
So that's even if he's still not going to be giving it a big bear hug
right. Without
a shirt on.
Right.
It's still improvement is what you're
saying. Much improvement. So we were really, really happy with the tree this year. And for those that like stalk us on social media, you might remember that last year we had like a major Christmas tree disaster. Matt told me that he never wanted to cut down a tree again. So we're super thrilled that this year went so much better, and that we got a tree that isn't giving him the rash of death. So we're good. We had a nice long-ish weekend. I always feel like when I do something on a Friday that it makes the weekend feel longer. Do you have that? Well, I know you don't like go out or whatever, but never mind.
Thanks. I'm a hermit. I never leave my house.
You tell us.
That I'm boring and I never do anything. Yeah.
So Friday night
I don't have it like, do you mean like you did something after work you got home and then you guys did something as a family? Or do you mean you took Friday off and you did something as a family?
No. So I left work just a little bit early, like 3. And then Matt and I actually drove out to about an hour from here to like the number one Washingtonian rated restaurant that we've loved for years. And we're super happy and proud that the chef is getting the recognition that he deserves out at a restaurant called Patamac Farms, where they grow their own vegetable and use only pastured meat. So everything is like local, seasonal, pastured. It's awesome. And so there was like a group dinner there for this local group called Dulles Organics Group. Dulles is like a regional area around here. And so we had like this big dinner with a whole bunch of people who were into the same kind of stuff we were into, only not necessarily paleo, but just like, you know, high quality food and nourishing their families and people who share kefir grains and scobies and ferment together.
Very cool people.
Very cool people. And we wined and dined with them, and that was a lot of fun. And then Matt and I stayed out in Loudoun County Friday night, as we do, like our couple's thing. We did a bed and breakfast, and then we kind of putzed around Middleburg for the day before coming home. So it was a lot of fun, and then it was just busy, busy, busy. My mom moved out a little while ago, and she had her housewarming party for her new place Saturday, so I kind of helped her get that together. Once we got home Saturday, I went over to her house and helped her prep and went to her party, and I'm super happy for her because she's happy and yada, yada, yada. And then Sunday, I actually went to the gym, like a other gym other than my own. And we made a gingerbread house that's totally not paleo. I got it from Happy Tart, where I've taken you before. They had a gingerbread kit, and the idea sounded so much easier to me than trying to like make my own grain-free gingerbread house. So the boys and I did that, and we had intended to let it go stale and not let them eat anything. And then when we woke up this morning, they had pretty much eaten almost all the candy off of the house, sneaking it. So this is why we do not have candy in the house. They have been a nightmare all day. And, you know, these are the kinds of things. We're human. We learn lessons. And the boys have been informed that we will no longer be able to do something special like this since we can't trust them, which is unfortunate. But we empower our children a lot. It's something I talk about on almost like every podcast and interview that I do, not just here, but when people interview me about like, how do you get your kids to go paleo, which is like the number one question I get asked. You know, my answer is almost always like, well, we've empowered our children with the information, and it, you know, we trust them, and sometimes they don't make the best choices, but overall we find that amount of responsibility and accountability and empowerment goes a long way to them making informed decisions and good choices. Of course, it doesn't happen overnight, but we're working on year five. So,
and just like every once in a while, an adult will, you know, drink too much or eat a gallon of ice cream or like whatever it is. Sometimes kids eat an entire gingerbread house before their parents get up in the morning.
Yes. So to be fair, they only ate the outer candy.
They left. So they ate all the stuff that's pure sugar.
Like, I don't know if they thought we weren't going to notice that, like,
I can just imagine start with like, well, if we just take this one from like this corner over here, like,
yeah. And then they just couldn't stop is probably what happens.
Candy's yummy. Like, anybody who tells you that they don't think candy's yummy anymore, well, maybe it's real, but I don't think it's the general experience, and I'm generally incredibly jealous if it is.
So, yeah, that's what's been up with me.
There's nothing I can say now that doesn't make me sound like hermits a lot and person who never leaves my house. I thought we had a pretty busy weekend. We pulled our 10-year-old fake tree out of the garage and decorated it. The girls were after me saying maybe 20 minutes earlier, like, you can't roughhouse near the Christmas tree. There's breakable ornaments on it.
You have breakable ornaments. That's funny.
Right. So, they were spinning until they got dizzy because, you know, that's fun. And my not quite 8-year-old fell into the bottom of the tree. And fortunately, like, she knocked off, like, all of the ornaments near the bottom are the non-breakable ones. So she knocked off a bunch of ornaments. Nothing broke. It was fine. Except the tree has this, like, permanent dent in it. I was like, this tree, which we got 10 years ago you know, we lived in a high rise apartment, so we weren't allowed to have live trees because of fire regulations. And now that we have this tree, it seems like we should keep using it until forever, because
until there's a giant hole in it.
It's basically like reduce, reuse, recycling, right? Like, there's no sense in getting a new tree while this one is still functional, but now it's got this, like, yeah, this kid-sized, kid-shaped, like, just, I think she, like, broke one of the, I'll say branch, even though it's not really a branch, but, like, one of the branch things, and it's now, like, dragging on the ground, and there's just this, yeah, pretty much child shaped dent in it, and it's overall got a lean. So I don't know if this will be the last year, but knowing us, we'll put it away instead of like sending it for a recycler, whatever. I don't even know what you do with plastic trees. I hope they don't just go to the dump. But knowing us, we'll like package it all up at the end of the holidays and then put it back in the garage and be like, well, next year we can do something. And then we'll pull that out next year and we'll be like, yeah, it's fine. It's such a whatever. It still looks festive. But we had so much fun, and it was just like, I went to the farmer's market and I came home and my husband and the kids had sort of all gotten started, and I didn't even know they were going to do that. So I came home, I was like, Christmas arrived while I was gone. And so it was just really fun. So we did that. We played outside, and then Santa visited our subdivision on Sunday. So we went and saw Santa, who was, I mean, my kids were like crazy excited. We do it every year. We go see Santa at our subdivision clubhouse, and you know, my oldest is just like vibrating with joy because Santa has promised her magic flying wings every year now for 4 years, and because that's what she asked for. And Santa has always said, like, I'll work on it and I'll see what I can do. And so every year she's like, she can't wait to talk to Santa to get like the update on what's the status on these magic flying wings. Cause like, I want to know if this year's my lucky year. And so Santa once again told her, like, we're having some trouble with them. Like, it's still not working. It's a really tricky thing. I don't know what we can do. I'm trying. And so she took that as, I think it's going to happen this year. So that's my oldest. And then my youngest, who the whole time she had this list of things that she wanted to tell Santa that she wanted, you know, like a mini Barbie dollhouse bedroom. That's pink and purple. And I'm not entirely sure what that means, because I think she just made that up. But I think she wants a box, but with like a bed in it for her Barbie, I think is what she actually wants. But then we got there and she was like, whoa, that's a real guy. And he's tall and he's like wearing red and he has this big beard. Like, she was just like, and he's offering me candy. I'm pretty sure I'm not supposed to go sit on this guy's lap. Like, this is, hang on. This is not what I actually thought was going to happen. And she like refused to go talk to him. And then she wanted a candy cane, and she knew that it was the kids who went through the line and sat on his lap got a candy cane. So she went through the line, sat on his lap with her head tucked down and her chin like practically in her shirt, and refused to say a word so that she could get off his lap and go get a candy cane. So it was adorable. She also learned how to pronounce banana, which is also adorable. She's been calling them bananas up until now. She just yesterday started calling them bananas. Like, it's really over-accentuated.
I know. There's only a few things left that Wesley still says like a baby. And when he learns to not say them like that, I have such this, like, torn feeling about a 4-year-old should know how to pronounce this, but he's my baby.
I actually told her, so honey, so I'm really proud of you for being able to say banana now, but maybe just like you and me, we can just call them bananas just for us forever. She's like, okay, mom, like, I worked really hard at this, but okay, just for you. so we've got banana, and we're still working on pronouncing music. We still have that one. She says Nougus for music. And it's so funny because she's such like her, she's just got these words that are mispronounced, but her overall pronunciation of words is fantastic. And then she just has these like odd words that are like leftovers from when she first learned how to talk. And it's adorable. So we've got bananas, but we still have nougat. So that's good. So cool. are you guys doing, we are actually, I know we're talking about holiday stuff because we've just had weekends that are kind of holiday themed, but we're actually doing a sort of preparing for the holiday themed episode today. So are you guys planning anything special for the holidays? Taking it easy?
No. So we've started this new tradition. I think this will be our third year doing it, where we're going to go to Great Wolf Lodge the week of Christmas. And we had a blast doing that. I know we went during that time last year, and when we told the boys we were going to do it this year, they got super excited. I'm sorry for all like the weird noises. I don't there's a, speaking of holiday neighborhood things, there's a fireman that gets on a fire truck and does like the Santa thing around our neighborhood, and he just like drives around for 2 hours. So I keep hearing a fire truck and ambulance noises. It's really distracting. I don't know if you can hear it or not.
It's just a fireman.
It's just driving. Santa on a fire truck. Yeah.
Just Santa on a fire truck.
You know, no big deal. And I don't know
kinda
why
like
they
an
come
ice cream truck, but it's Santa.
It's, I mean, at this point it's 8:30 at night. Santa needs to go to bed, you know? So then I don't know what all these other computer noises are happening, but so we're going to go to Great Wolf Lodge. We're super excited about that. We do have some posts.
Do you actually have Christmas there?
No. So we're going to go, I think Christmas is like on Thursday, and we're going to go Monday, Tuesday, I think is what we're doing. So we'll have like Christmas Eve entirely at home, I think is the plan. So we don't have to deal with traffic and stuff. But we have a post on our blog about how we do Great Wolf Lodge paleo, and how we make that work for us. And so I think it's worth checking out. We love it, and the kids love it, and it's a nice little getaway in the wintertime. So we're going to do that, and then we're going to host our annual brunch that we always host. And our tradition is the night before we make monkey bread, but we don't bake it. So we make it, and then we put it in the fridge, and we put out cookies for Santa and carrots for reindeer. And we open a gift that's from mom and dad that's always pajamas and books. And we get in our pajamas, and we watch Santa on the NORAD tracker. And then we read books and go to bed, but nobody actually goes to bed because they're so excited for hours. So that's our tradition. And then in the morning, all of our family comes over because we're the only ones, other than my sister who has one son, we're the only ones that have kids. So it's nice. Everybody comes to us and we do a big brunch, and then usually just kind of wear elastic waistband pants and hang out and play with our toys and relax the rest of the day. So that's our plan. Big plans.
Sounds good. This is actually going to be the first year in quite a long time that we don't have company staying with us over the Christmas holidays. So it's going to be like just the four of us. And I think I'm personally really looking forward to something that's low key. We'll probably do a lot of like the family things that we like to do, like walk to the playground, go for a hike in the woods, you know, probably do something like the science museum, like things that, you know, we just all of us enjoy. My husband has already said that he would like to introduce our kids to Star Wars this Christmas holiday.
and as he should.
And the kids have both agreed that they are finally ready to entertain dad and watch Star Wars. But now we're having the episode 1 versus episode 4 discussion.
I thought we solved that problem already.
What was your suggestion?
That you start with the oldest movies first.
Oh, see, that's where he's at.
Yeah, everybody who's like a legit fan will tell you that.
I kind of feel like we should start at the beginning of the story and start with 1, because Jar Jar Binks is awesome.
It was never meant to be told that way. It's like 8 against 1 at this point. Just go with it. We even had people, the last time we talked about this in the podcast, I actually had people comment on the show notes or social media or whatever it was and tell me that we were correct and that you had to show your daughters the oldest movies first. Even our fans agree, Sarah.
Bah, humbug. I like Jar Jar. I'm like one of like seven people in the world who like Jar Jar. But my husband has decided that we have to start our kids on a Star Wars obsession so that when episode 7 comes out, we can like go to it as a family. I'm like, you don't want to pre-screen it at all? Like, no, we'll just go. I'm like, really? You don't want to pre-screen it at all? Like, our kids are, you know, then they'll be like not quite 9 and just turned 6. He's like, yep. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, we won't pre-screen either. We'll just go.
Well, yeah. So we'll just, you know, if we have to have heads hidden in laps or whatever, I guess that's just what we'll do. So I think we're just, you know, planning on kind of catching up on things around the house and taking it easy and probably doing lots of CrossFit and probably make monkey bread like I did last year because your recipe's the bomb.
Thanks. And it's actually in Real Life Paleo if people are into that.
Yeah. And then, yeah, that was pretty much amazing. But yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to like not having really fixed plans. Like for us, our traditions are like, you know, get the turkey in the oven, go for a walk. Like, you know, our traditions have always been things like that. When I was growing up, we would all go to the beach for a couple hours in the middle of the day, Christmas Day. So we'd like open up our gifts, have breakfast, go to the beach for a couple hours, come home and, you know, finish making Christmas dinner. So I think we'll do like the scaled down version of that with no beach because it's a long drive to the beach from Atlanta. But yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to the simplicity and not, you know, not having to deal with all the stuff that we have like lots of questions about. There's always stuff. I did want to, make a little bit of an announcement.
I'm always nervous when you do that.
It's a good one. Wait, now I'm like, I have like all these ideas going through my head of like, what could I be announcing that would be like shocking? And like, what? No! So I've decided for the holidays from now until midnight on Christmas Eve that for anybody who buys both of my books as a gift for somebody, that I would like to add to their gift by giving them a copy of the Paleo Approach Dinner Club ebook. And so if you are giving the gift of the Paleo Approach and the Paleo Approach cookbook to somebody, send me an email at contact@thepaleomom.com. with the subject line, make my gift extra special. And I will send you a link where you can download the Paleo Approach Dinner Club ebook for free.
That is an announcement.
I know. Like, isn't that cool? I just, you know, I'm hoping that the dinner, whether it's the dinner club or, you know, other sort of social, you know, one of the things that we have so much trouble with over the holidays, and it's like what we're going to have issues with questions, is the social aspect of being paleo or being autoimmune protocol when the people around you aren't. And this this real struggle that we have in explaining why we do what we do, explaining how really bad it is if we eat those foods, you know, this like extra pressure to rationalize even though we don't need to. And then this feeling of like, even when people understand it, it's still this feeling of missing out, being deprived, like not being part of whatever the bigger thing is. And I really want, you know, to encourage people to find, you know, not necessarily like instead of, you know, your whatever work potluck or your family get together, but to start thinking about, you know, making it a priority to get together with people who do eat similarly and finding those people, whether through a local meetup or we've got local boards on the paleomomcommunity.com, which is a free membership forum, and finding those people and making new bonds with people. And that's kind of what the Paleo Approach Dinner Club ebook was sort of designed to do. So I want to sort of make it easier for people to find that community and find that support so that they've got they've got somebody who's got their back, and they've got somebody who's going to understand, and hopefully that community will just continue to grow. So I thought this was kind of a fun way to do that and to support people making changes in their lives for the better.
And another way to do that is to gift people the books that you learned to love this lifestyle with. So whether that's Sarah's books or our books or other people's books, sharing the gift of health at Christmas time is always a great way to go. So,
well, especially because right at, you know, when you're doing things like that right at Christmas, you're doing it right before the major time of the year where people are actually going to tackle some kind of change. So you're doing it right before New Year's, where people will, you know, like, it's just, there's this mentality around New Year's resolutions, and there are people who will try something new on for a New Year's resolution that they won't try any other time of the year. So when you're supporting the people in your life by giving them your favorite book, your favorite resource, whatever it is, you're also timing it really well, so that it's like, hey, and here's something for you to read over the next week and start January 1st, and I'll do it with you. And I always want to add, like, and I'll do it with you. Like, I think that's really important when you're trying to support someone in your life making some kind of change, is being that, you know, person in the trenches with them is really, really important. And, you know, it also leads to, you know, a really great sort of bonding experience too. So it's awesome in that way too.
I personally think that, like, giving a gift of whatever your favorite paleo cookbook is, and then like a batch of whatever your favorite food is from that book. So whether it's, you know, entire crock pot of braised chuck roast, or if it's a batch of cookies, a lot of people are swayed by the idea that, like, oh, it's surprisingly delicious. I had no idea that you could actually eat something that wasn't bland and boring, because I think a lot of people have come to think of these kinds of quote-unquote diets as being like low salt, low flavor, you know? And
yeah.
When you show them that you can have a wide variety of flavors and textures, and how many amazing foods we do get to eat and how great they taste, it can be a wonderful opportunity to open the conversation, and then, you know, pair that with a copy of your favorite cookbook that the recipe came from, and saying, hey, let you know, like, I'll do this with you in January if you want to, no pressure, but I thought you might like this. Again, you can't force anyone to do anything, but even if they don't go paleo, like, these cookbooks have great recipes in them. I personally have people in my life that buy cookbooks from us all the time, like personal friends or coworkers or whatever, who aren't paleo, but like make our recipes and love them. So it's not that, you know, you have to be paleo to make the recipes. I mean, my apple butter barbecue sauce is kind of like renowned in the office because I brought in jars of it for people once as a thank you gift, and now everybody loves it. So it has, people don't care that it's paleo. So I kind of have an announcement, Sarah.
Okay. Now I'm scared.
Are you done?
I have another thing, but it's unrelated. So I'm going to let you do your thing, and then maybe your thing is my thing, and then I won't have to do my thing.
Okay. Well, I wanted to formally announced to everyone that my team, more so than anyone else, has been working on a project I tasked them on months and months ago before we even finished Real Life Paleo. And I talked about it with you, Sarah, and you were all like gung ho, yeah, you've got to do it, which didn't help my like type A personality to avoid taking on yet another task.
I should not ever encourage you.
No, I'm getting much better. The team and I are getting much better about getting our arms around things and learning to say no. But what I am excited about is something that I didn't say no to. And the reason I didn't say no to it was because I really feel like it can be a great opportunity for people. So we have teamed up with a ton of people, both in the paleo community as well as in the real food paleo the real food community that aren't necessarily paleo, to come up with a bundle package that we're calling the Family Resolution Revolution, and that will go live the day after Christmas. So we can put some links in the show notes for you to see, kind of preview who's on board already and what books are being included, and the details about it. But it'll have ebooks, We have workshops, we have printables, worksheets, calendars, shopping guides, we have subscription services, we have online magazines, all the things that could kind of get a family started on the right track at the right time of year, like you're saying, New Year's. So that's why we've been working towards this goal and planning it so that between kind of Christmas and New Year's, people have an opportunity to buy what we believe are the best resources available, e-resources for people to get on the right path. And we've worked with the people who are contributing to this bundle to give them a unique opportunity for compensation. I don't know if most people know, but most bundles, you only make what you sell as an affiliate. But I wanted to do something special, and it was really important to me, Sarah, as you and I were talking about it, and I told you my idea, and you were saying how great that is for people who contribute, because...
And then promptly stole it for my...
Yes, and then you hijacked the idea
for dinner club, yeah.
But that's okay. I'm that just, you know, flattery, that's the highest form. So what we're doing, and... what this means for you as a buyer is that no matter who you buy this bundle from, you are supporting every contributor, because we will be giving every contributor, granted, it has to be a small percentage because there are 40 contributors, but we're giving them a percentage of every single sale. And it was something that's really important to us. Like, we are personally not making as much profit as we could from kind of being the organizers of a bundle. And we're doing that because we want to keep the cost low to the consumer, and we want to optimize how much money contributors receive for their hard work and what they've put into the bundle. And I've seen some of the resources that have signed up so far. Sarah, you were the very first person to sign up other than ourselves. So we'll have our own ebook, Three-Phase Paleo. And I think we'll be including a coupon, like a discount coupon for Paleo to Go in it as well. But we also have Sarah's book. We have Well Fed 2 is being included. We've got subscription services for both Paleo Plan and Once a Month Meals, which are phenomenal ways to start planning the new year and getting your meals off right. We've got Paleo Magazine on board. So we've got a bunch of resources, as well as, like I said, we've got guides on, I think, homesteading and essential oils and different things that aren't necessarily paleo specific that are lifestyle related. So we're super excited to kind of release the bundle. You can't buy it yet, but we want to start talking about it for people so that if you need to budget for it, you know about it in advance. And it is 10 days only. And it is a once opportunity. A lot of these people are signing up for the very first time and don't intend to continue to do it. And so as we solidify the list of 40 contributors, we'll be updating the website. Again, it's familyresolutionrevolution.com. And I'm sure we'll have blog posts and stuff about it, but just want to get your wheels turning and excited for the opportunity to perhaps get your year, or make other people in your life, make them aware of that. Perhaps gift it in advance to them, print out a copy of the webpage and say you'll buy it and give it to them or something. But yeah, so that's exciting. Like, it's a really big deal to pull these things together in terms of, like, coordination and the IT infrastructure and making sure that we're getting a nice balance for people, because it's really important for me that if I were buying this bundle, let's say my first 6 months of paleo, that I would get a ton of resources that I would need. And because there have been so many bundles in the last couple of years, I didn't want to use the same resources that people already have ebooks for. So most of what's going in, I don't know that there's anything that's been included in bundles before. So, like, Well Fed 2, I don't think has ever been in a bundle before. And I know the full version of Three-Phase Paleo has never been in one before. So, and I know Sarah, your book hasn't, that kind of stuff. So anyway, we're super excited. And I know that I said that I wouldn't be writing any more books, but it's because I have ideas for things that I hope can reach people and help people like this, that are kind of easier for me to coordinate with the team and kind of say, okay, I have all these ideas, now run with it. Versus when we write books, it's like all Matt and I. That's very hard. So in terms of, you know, our time and that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping to be able to continue to connect with our audience in that sort of fashion without having to completely sacrifice my sanity.
I'm looking forward to watching you do this.
I don't know what that means. All right.
It looks to me from the outside, it looks like a really ridiculously large amount of work. So I'm just going to see what you do.
Well, kudos to Monica, who's been mainly coordinating the entire thing. She and I have been working very closely together on how we want this vision to come together. And she's been my man on the ground in terms of execution. So high five to Monica. We're going to pull it off. I was kind of hesitant to say anything because until we had most of the people secured, I think we're up to over 30 people at this point. And we want exactly 40 in order to be able to have the right contribution payouts and the right amount of material for people. I feel like any more than that would be too overwhelming anyway to sort through if you bought the package. So it was the right number for me. And I think we're definitely going to hit that target, and we're excited to share it with everyone. And I promise you, I will come out enthusiastic and not adrenal burnout on the other side of this endeavor.
Hey, so Monica, I know you're listening. I'm doing a little like cheerleading dance for you right now. And it goes, go Monica, go Monica. It's really, I look like a complete dork right now. No one can see me. And so that's great.
I'm 100% sure she appreciates it because she's probably like nursing a baby and not having showered in 3 days when she hears this. So any cheers for Monica is always awesome.
Showers are overrated.
Well, especially for new moms. Like, it's a luxury.
I have two other quick announcements. This feels like the announcement section right now of the show.
Holy moly.
One, I wanted to just say thank you to everyone who listened to our podcast last week and then posted pictures of my books in Costco and tagged me so I could see it, because that was awesome. Also, I quite appreciated all of the hashtags Sarah is the bomb. Awful with Sarah. That was a surprise. It was awesome. Thank you, everyone. We can stop now with the hashtag.
Oh, now that you've brought it up, you're just going to get another round.
Yeah. So I just want to say thank you. And also, because of the people who went to Costco and took pictures of my book, very, very exciting, I've realized that Costco is actually the cheapest place to buy my books.
Wowza.
So if you have a Costco membership, Costco is selling my books for $23.99. And I have not seen them that cheap anywhere else. So if you have a Costco membership or a friend with a Costco membership and you've been wanting to buy my books and you've been like, I don't know if I can pay the $39.95 list price, Costco magic. And then the last announcement is, I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but I'm doing like a ton of giveaways this week, and I'm doing two prize packages, one worth $400 and one worth $500. This week on my blog. So if people are listening to this before like midnight Sunday night, go hop on the blog. It'll be a couple posts back by then, but it'll be easy to find, and go enter. Because who doesn't want like $500 worth of stuff, right?
Can we talk about the other thing that was on your blog this week? Oh, before we do that, my book is also in Costco Canada. it makes a really fantastic Christmas gift, not just for me. I can tell you that all the reviews that I've been reading, a lot of people believe that this is a fantastic book to gift to someone who is just starting paleo and needs some hand-holding. So if you have someone in that like that in your life, you can get it in stores, Barnes & Noble, Costco Canada, a lot of independent bookstores, as well as Amazon. So, and we will be in Nashville and Minneapolis, January 2nd and 3rd. We're working on Toronto on the 4th. We may not be able to pull that off, as we discussed last week. That's still up in the air. And then, Sarah, you've secured January 24th and 25th for Las Vegas and
St. Louis. A suburb of St. Louis.
Cool.
Where the Costco is, because, you know, Costco, awesome.
Cool. Okay, so I happened to read something on your blog earlier this week, and I think you're going to do some science on it. Did you want to talk about that at all before you jump into science?
Why don't we introduce a little bit? So one of the things that I have been trying to do and trying to specifically carve out more time for in my life is going back to being able to write science posts as regularly as I did, you know, when I first started the blog and sort of like up until book craziness happened. Because I used to post, you know, a science-related post once, sometimes even twice a week. And I'm not sure, you know, now I tend to tackle deeper topics. So I'm not sure that twice a week is ever going to happen. But I'm trying to get back to that sort of frequency of, you know, a really good detailed post that's easy to read and accessible, because that's kind of my MO. I'm very passionate about scientific literacy and scientific education and explaining these scientific concepts in a way that's fun to read and really accessible, and you don't need to have like an advanced degree to be able to understand what I write. So I have this like list of topics that I have been meaning to get to, and a number of those topics are really answering the question of, is it paleo? And I think that this really reflects this shift that we've seen in the paleo movement, especially in the last year, of starting to look at foods that would traditionally not be considered paleo. And, you know, many people who have sort of been on this healing journey for a long time, they've healed their bodies, you know, they're much more resilient to these foods. They're experimenting with them. They're finding them that they're okay. And they're trying to, you know, I think some of them are trying to rationalize it for themselves, rather than using individual tolerance and healing your body as an explanation. And there's a lot of ingredients that are, or a lot of foods in general, that as a community, we're starting to go, well, oh, that's a gray area. We're starting to sort of accept things as a gray area. We're starting to reevaluate whether or not a food is good or not. And I think that's great. Like, I think it's really important for us to look at what's good in a food versus what's bad in a food, and determine whether or not that food should have a place in our diets, and that there's a lot of gray there. So there's some room for individual experimentation. So when I'm doing, you know, seminars, I talk about, you know, good things, which is nutrients. Like, what is this going to add to my health? So what nutrition does this food have? And bad things are maybe things that are inflammatory, things that irritate the gut or damage the gut, things that feed the wrong kind of bacteria in the gut, things that mess up with your hormones. And when you look at, you know, something like grass-fed meat, tons of nutrition, nothing problematic as long as it's part of a varied diet. And so it's a really easy yes. Yes, we include that in our diet. And if you look at something like wheat has very, very little nutrients, you know, very, very little nutrition to offer us. It's highly inflammatory because of the carbohydrates. It has several different proteins in it that activate the immune system, irritate and damage the lining of the gut, and feed the wrong types of bacteria, typically preferentially E. coli. It's like whenever you see something that feeds the wrong kind of bacteria, it's almost always E. coli. And so you kind of go, okay, well, that's got, you know, nothing really good, lots of bad. Like, it's a really obvious no. And so when we're looking at the paleo diet, we kind of look at those foods in that light, and we really look at the contemporary science about, you know, what we know about the compounds in those foods and how they interact with the human body, you end up with a sliding scale. So you end up with all of this gray in between. And so there's, for example, like, the dairy has been a food that has been debated for pretty much as long as paleo has been paleo. And, you know, when you start to look at grass-fed dairy, you end up with, there's lots of nutrition, but there's quite a few things that might be problematic. And then you go, okay, this is a food that you need to eliminate for a while and then try to reintroduce and see how you do. And it becomes like purely a food that you need to evaluate individual tolerance. And the way you evaluate individual tolerance is through an elimination diet. And so I love that the paleo movement is starting to use this approach to look at things like potatoes and white rice and maybe like lentils. And I think that that's really neat. But I think that one of the things that's happening is we're starting to get away from this discussion of what is good in food and what is bad in food. And we're starting to rationalize food based on, well, I eat it and I felt okay. And I think that that does a disservice to the community at large, because the idea is to formulate a series of recommendations, not based on what worked for one person trying it, one person deciding that they tolerate it, but what we know about how the compounds in those foods interact with the human body. So I wrote a post this week that was one of a number that I have planned in that series, and one that I've been working on for a while. Actually, it's a topic that I discuss in the Paleo Approach. So it was actually, the post was an expansion on the discussion that's already been in the Paleo Approach for almost a year now, that I wrote 2 years ago. But it has become something that I've seen a lot in the last year. Again, it's sort of that sort of time frame of emulsifiers and stabilizers being added, which, I mean, are standard in sort of gluten-free baking, especially gluten-free prepackaged products that you buy in stores. And we're starting to see, you know, as Paleo likes to take all of these cool strategies from gluten-free baking, and I think as a general rule, that's great to take whatever food chemistry strategies we can, but it's something that's been taken from gluten-free baking and added to Paleo baking without ever asking the question of what's good in these foods and what's bad in these foods, and is this a good food to eat? So I wrote a pretty epic blog post about that this week, and it pretty much went viral. It's called "Is It Paleo? Guar Gum, Xanthan Gum, and Lecithin? Oh My!" And then I actually go through five different examples of emulsifiers. And I think because we're doing a holiday episode, and we're going to be kind of talking about holiday treats and gray areas and things like that, that probably talking a little bit about what I actually discussed on my post for Science with Sarah would be a good idea. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I think for me personally, when I shared it in the context of it going viral, I was one of the people that was like, yes, this is great information that people need to be aware of. You know, what I said is that we include those foods occasionally in gluten-free treats, and we call it our 20%. And the problem that I have, and I think that you're trying to relay, is that it's just not paleo. It's not to say that, like, I put soy lecithin or xanthan gum or guar gum on the list of, like, gluten and tomatoes, because that's, right, for me, like, its own little food group of things I just cannot touch. But I just think it's important for people to understand when they're looking at ingredients, and especially these days, I don't know about you, Sarah, but we're getting contacted on almost at least probably daily basis, if not like multiple vendors on a daily basis, about new products and, you know, items to be marketed that people are claiming to be paleo. And I mean, half the time I ask to see an ingredient list or ask them about the food practices that they're using, and they're not what I would define as paleo at all. And so, but if someone is putting a label on something and they're going to call it paleo or primal or caveman, and then it's not, it's very deceiving. And for people who are just going to trust labels, it's important to know that there is no, like, rules that people are following to put paleo on a label. Like,
there's no central organization that people need to put their product forward for approval to put those words on a label. So it's just like the word natural.
Yep.
There's no regulation for the word natural. If you see natural on a label, it can mean pretty much anything. Someone can put paleo on a label, and it could be made with wheat. Like, there would be a public outcry, hopefully, but there's no regulation for using that word and putting that word on a label. So yeah, it can have any number of really terrible ingredients in it.
So what I love about your post, not just this post, but a lot of your posts, especially the science ones, is that it's all about consumer awareness and self-education, because the more you know, right? Like, let's skip, G.I. Joe says it best here. The more you know, the more you can be aware of the foods that you're eating and make informed decisions. And I think
is that what G.I. Joe says?
G.I. Joe says, now you know annoying's half the battle.
That's a pretty awesome phrase.
Right?
I wasn't allowed to watch G.I. Joe when I was a kid.
Well, usually always, like, that last 30 seconds of, like, the cut of G.I. Joe would come on before Gem and the Rockers. And
I used to watch Gem.
Right. So I would always see the, now you know annoying's half the battle line, like over and over and over again when I would turn on Gem and the Rockers. So that's where I get it from.
It's
now I'm showing my age.
Yeah, well, so am I. And it was probably much more age appropriate for you to watch at the time. I was probably too old for it.
All right, so let's talk about these emulsifiers in some science context for holidays.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
So as we sort of already led into in the news and views section of this podcast, I want to talk about how to read a label when we're looking at ingredients to try to decide if a treat is going to be an acceptable treat for the holidays. And in part, you know, there's always going to be better decisions, less better decisions. And it always is going to depend on your individual tolerance, what you're willing to accept in terms of your own reactions to foods and where the balance is for you in your life. But specifically, emulsifiers, thickeners, and stabilizers are a group of food additives. They sort of all have all of those properties. So they kind of all emulsify, they all thicken, they all stabilize, and the different chemicals in that group, some will be better emulsifiers, some will be better thickeners, some will be better stabilizers. And what's chosen for baking or whatever product is usually based on like exactly what the chemical products are. But common members of this food additive group are xanthan gum, guar gum, carrageenan, cellulose gum, and lecithin. And those are definitely the ones that you're most likely to see in a product marketed for paleo community or in a, you know, gluten-free product if you're thinking about, you know, a cheat. And everyone knows I don't really like that word, but I still can't think of a better word. But, you know, something that's going to fit into your 20%. And for me, it's really important to sort of explain what these are, where they come from, and what we know about how they affect the human body so that you can make the best educated choice that you can for yourself. So I'm going to go through those five examples, guar gum, carrageenan, xanthan gum, cellulose gum, and lecithin, because those are the ones that are the most commonly seen. But there are many other members of this family that you might find, like locust bean gum, for example, which is highly related to guar gum. And so just be aware that when you see words, especially words with the word gum, and with that end in os, so like cellulose, that those often belong to this family. So guar gum is derived from the guar bean, which is a legume. And what they do is it's actually derived specifically from the endosperm. And so what they do to produce guar gum is they mechanically split the beans. The rest of it that's not the endosperm gets turned into animal feed for concentrated animal feedlot operations. And then the endosperm is basically pulverized and turned into it's pulverized and then put through a metal screen to get rid of any big bits. And that is the powder that is guar gum. So it comes from a legume, and it comes from a legume that is actually quite high in cyanogenic glycosides. So that means that it has a higher trace cyanide content than a lot of other foods. So like in the same category as apple seeds, for example. Carrageenan comes from an edible red seaweed that is dried and dehydrated, and then it's treated with caustic potash, typically, and which is what is inside alkaline batteries, just, you know, to throw that out there. There's a chemical reaction that happens there, and then the carrageenan itself is separated out by centrifugation and filtration, and then it's dehydrated back into a powder. So that's how carrageenan is made. Xanthan gum is actually a metabolic byproduct secreted by a specific type of bacteria that is actually a plant disease. So it causes things like leaf spot. The bacteria is grown in a liquid that contains lots of sugar. That liquid is typically derived from wheat, corn, soy, and or dairy. The bacteria ferments the sugar, and then they produce, I mean, it's basically their waste, is xanthan gum. So then they add isopropyl alcohol, so like rubbing alcohol, to the liquid, which then makes the xanthan gum turn into a particle, and then it's separated out with centrifugation again, so they spin it really fast, goes to the bottom, and then they dry that into a powder. Cellulose gum is extracted from wood pulp and cotton fiber, so they're byproducts of papermaking and cloth-making industries, and then it is treated with caustic soda or lye, which is the same stuff used to make soap and detergents. And then it's treated with chloroacetic acid. And this was my favorite as I was researching this. This is like my favorite fun fact of like the entire article. So we treat it with chloroacetic acid and then it's separated out again with sort of filtration. But chloroacetic acid is so, so poisonous. And such a huge skin irritant that if you spilled it on yourself and more than 6% of your skin was covered with it, you would die. So
sounds like something I'd love to eat.
Right. Lecithin, it can be derived from eggs or canola or sunflower seeds, but basically it was invented as a byproduct of the soybean oil production. And, so during soybean oil production, the initial crude oil that's sort of obtained with this like high pressure, high heat pressing, it creates this like gummy deposit that was basically in the original days of soybean oil production was gumming up the machinery. So they created this process called degumming, and it basically separated out all of this. It's lecithin, but it was a gum. And it's done through a sort of a variety of enzymatic reactions, chemical reactions, solvent reactions. And they take this gum and it was this waste product. So they created the wonderful lecithin industry out of that. And lecithin is actually a little bit different. So the other emulsifiers that I just talked about, guar gum, carrageenan, and xanthan gum, and cellulose gum, they all end up being a type of undigestible fiber. Lecithin's a little bit different because it contains, it does contain some sugar molecules, but it also contains a lot of fat molecules, and it's actually mostly fats, triglycerides and phospholipids and glycolipids. And it also has these sort of branchy sugar chain molecules that are such great emulsifiers as well. So, to me, researching all of that, like, I don't want to scare people away from, from food and by just exaggerating the chemical nature and the manufacturing process of these foods. But I do want to emphasize that these are not whole foods. Like, when you think about the reason why we're adding these to foods is to, make things blend together, to make things stable. And in often cases, it's replacing the chemistry that you could get from something like eggs. So when you look at egg as a whole food that's full of nutrient, and then you look at xanthan gum, and that it's the metabolic byproduct of a bacteria that's grown in a medium that is frequently contaminated with gluten. And that's why xanthan gum can be so problematic for celiacs, because it contains trace gluten. Like, to me, that's just, it's not even a contest. And so when you're reading these things, you're knowing where these ingredients come from is important, but it's not everything. So just the fact that it's manufactured by itself doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad ingredient. So the other thing I did was I looked at the medical research and looked at what we know about how these foods impact the gut, impact, other aspects of health. So guar gum.
It's been a long time since you've had a science segment so long that you needed to drink water.
I know. I'm going to have another sip right now. I'm going dry. I'm talking so much. It's a huge topic. So, you know, basically every single one of these is a gut irritant and feeds gut dysbiosis. So guar gum causes a leaky gut and overfeeds toxic strains of E. coli. It also, when you add it to milk before high heat pasteurization, it makes the pathogenic bacteria and parasites in milk survive pasteurization. So like Listeria will survive pasteurization if there's guar gum added to the milk. So we don't know if it's going to improve the survival of pathogens in the digestive tract, but given that we also know that it supports the growth of enterotoxigenic E. coli, which is like the bad E. coli that makes you super sick, like it's hasn't been studied, but it's a pretty good guess that guar gum basically makes pathogens survive better in the gut. So that's guar gum. And guar gum is, I think, the most common place that paleo people would get exposed to guar gum is in canned coconut milk, and then boxed coconut milk, almond milk, you know, nut milks and yogurts. Like that's to me like where I see guar gum the most. Carrageenan is so good at creating a leaky gut. It causes basically something that looks like ulcerative colitis in animals. And it degrades throat digestion into known carcinogens. In fact, it's actually used in medical research to create tumors in animals for cancer research. And there is so much evidence that carrageenan might be one of the contributors to the rise in ulcerative colitis rates that there's like whistleblowers all over the scientific world talking about how carrageenan should be taken out of the food supply. And in fact, in many countries, it's banned for certain uses. So like it's illegal in baby formulas in Europe, for example. Xanthan gum is a great laxative. It causes intestinal bloating and diarrhea. And it was actually found to increase the rate of necrotizing enterocolitis in premature babies, which is the second greatest cause of death in preemies. So it has actually been removed from formulas that are specifically for preemies. I don't believe it's been removed from other baby formulas. Whether or not it feeds gut dysbiosis hasn't been studied. However, it is considered one of the best choices for coating petri dishes to grow fungi and bacteria in laboratory environments. And then, as I already mentioned, it's frequently contaminated with gluten. Cellulose gum, the one that's made from, you know, paper pulp and cotton fiber, is known to cause massive bacterial overgrowth, damage the mucus barrier of the small intestine, and cause inflammation in the small intestine that looks very much like Crohn's disease. And in fact, cellulose gum is, again, being like there are scientists calling for cellulose gum to be removed from the food supply. And like where people see cellulose gum, like it's often used to coat things, like they use it to coat grated cheese when you buy grated cheese in the package. That's probably not a really common food in paleo households. Where you might see it in paleo households would be in a thickened product, like a potentially like a, you know, almond milk yogurt or something like that.
It's also in some of the Applegate farm meat products.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
That makes me so sad.
Yeah.
They do everything else so well.
It's only a couple of them, but, you know, you've got to read your labels all the time.
And not expect that if a company makes one amazing product, that all of their products are going to be amazing. I'm sad. All right. So lecithin, the last one, the one that's in chocolate, is not a gut irritant. and does not appear to feed gut dysbiosis. As I mentioned, sort of like those other four are all basically, they qualify as fibers. They're these super complex long-chain sugars that are not digestible. And that's, when you talk about a long-chain sugar that's not digestible, like it's not a surprise that that feeds bacterial overgrowth, because that's what happens when you eat these, you know, long sugars that you can't digest yourself. So it kind of makes sense that that would be an effect of eating those. But lecithin, remember, was long chain sugars and also largely different kinds of fats like triglycerides. So what's interesting about lecithin is it's actually the only one out of all of these that has any health benefits that might be considered beneficial. So, for example, it's known to lower serum cholesterol, although the mechanism by which it does this may cause inherent nutritional deficiencies. So that's a bit of a problem. But lecithin's ability to bind to cholesterol does mean that it's investigated for things like dissolving gallstones. It's a sort of traditional midwife supplement for mastitis, even though that's never actually been studied in the scientific literature. So it's got a few little things like that. It's being investigated as a therapy for ulcerative colitis, although they haven't actually published any efficacy results yet. So there's some interesting things about lecithin, but there's also a potential link to increased risk of cardiovascular disease. And that's maybe not such a big surprise when you hear that one of the components in it is triglycerides. And when you have increased blood triglycerides, that's one of the best markers we currently have for increased risk of cardiovascular disease. But it does this because it feeds bacteria in the gut. And one of their metabolic byproducts is something called TMAO, which has been studied fairly extensively in the context of cardiovascular disease risk. It's the metabolic byproduct that like got everyone all in a tizzy about the link between red meat and cardiovascular disease a little while ago, that Dr. Jeff Leach from the Human Food Project so brilliantly sort of debunked. But it looks as though some kind of bacterium, we don't know what kind, eats the lecithin, makes TMAO, and that's actually increasing risk of cardiovascular disease and atherosclerosis, and probably just overall increasing inflammation. While it might have some benefits, that's a pretty major downside. And I think the most common place that we see lecithin is in chocolate. It's very, very common, especially in dark chocolate, because you don't have the dairy fats to use as emulsifier. So you don't need to add something. There's some amazing chocolates out there that don't have any lecithin in them whatsoever, but it's a more complex process to make them.
We personally eat Eating Evolved dark chocolate and Alter Eco. They're 85%. I don't know why it's not coming to me, but those are my two favorite.
Blackout,
yeah.
And Eating Evolved, they make amazing chocolate. Equal Exchange is also a really good soy-free chocolate, and so is Enjoy Life also does a soy-free.
Yeah, we've been getting all of our chocolate chips from Equal Exchange at Tropical Traditions because
they have a bittersweet one. I mean, that's
they have a bittersweet one, and it's fair trade. And it's the same price as the Enjoy Life one, which has higher sugar content and isn't fair trade. So I was super excited when I found that and found that Tropical Traditions was carrying it, because we buy practically all of our baking stuff from them. So, yeah.
So, the take home message is that this is a class of food additives. When you look at a list of foods to eliminate on Paleo, and you know that I like to always focus on the good, but we're going to focus on the foods to eliminate. And the list is grains, legumes, dairy, processed and refined foods. These are food additives. They're manufactured that are added to processed foods. It is a processed food chemical. It is created the same way a food dye is created. And so it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that they're gut irritants and that they feed the wrong type of bacteria and that they're potentially linked to disease. And so that shouldn't be a surprise. So like without a question, these ingredients are not paleo. So if you're going to consume them though, like that doesn't mean that, that I'm saying that nobody should ever eat them. It's that if you're eating them, don't label that thing as paleo. Label that as a cheat. Label it as your 20%. And be aware of how they make you feel, because these are definitely definitely compounds that, especially if you're dealing with any kind of chronic health conditions, are not going to be great for you. And I know for myself, I feel really awful, especially actually guar gum makes me feel worse than...
Yeah. And honestly, a lot of people say that they think that they have a problem. I'm not saying that this is your problem with coconut, because I know you have other problems with coconut, but a lot of people think that they have problems with coconut because they'll drink coconut milk from most of the name brands that have guar gum in them and then get a stomach ache or bloating or gas. And then they'll say, oh no, coconut doesn't agree with me. But in fact, it's the guar gum that's been added to coconut milk that causes a lot of people problems.
Yeah. And I definitely get a like stomach upset from xanthan gum, but it's not as crummy a feeling as I get from guar gum. But and like if I have chocolate with lecithin, I've never actually noticed any particular reaction that I can pinpoint to the lecithin. But as a general rule, I don't eat these things. And in fact, I don't consider it as a normal part of my 20%. I consider it as part of my 0.01%. Like it's a much more unusual treat for me to eat a product with these. It might be a one time a month rather than, you know, 20% would imply that you're eating something with these three times a week. And I would never even suggest that that would be even a remotely good idea for anybody.
Agreed. We're not eating 20% of our diet as emulsifiers.
Well, no, I mean, it's like foods that contain them is kind of what I meant more than them themselves. But thank you for, yeah. So that was the epic. If anybody like wants to rewind that and listen to it again, they're like, wait a minute, I didn't take notes. It's all on the blog, thepaleomom.com. The post was published on, let me see, December 4th. So that should allow you to go back and find it. And I'll put links in the show notes to the post, but it's definitely been something that it's interesting how many people were curious about those ingredients and wanted to know more about whether or not they were good. Like that information, I was able to find it, but I was able to do this research, and I'm kind of surprised that there weren't other posts about these ingredients being such big gut irritants, but definitely there was a hunger for that information out there.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So our first question is from Adrienne. I'm a mom of 2-year-old twins trying to navigate the upcoming holidays. Previously, we have been very strict with what our kids have been allowed to eat when we travel for family gatherings, but they had been a lot younger and much less aware of what was available to everyone else. My kids eat mostly paleo, with the addition of some high-quality dairy and/or gluten-free grains every so often. We are fortunate in that we have no clinical diagnoses directly related to sugar, grains, dairy, and no health issues with the kids. However, because of this, some family members dismiss our food choices as unnecessarily restrictive and silly. In particular, my in-laws seem to consider it their personal mission and right as biological grandparents to enlighten my kids to the wonders of Oreos, corn dogs, and ice cream, despite the constant no response when they ask my husband or myself if they can share their junk. In our everyday life at home, I would make homemade versions of any anticipated treats, but that really isn't an option with our hectic traveling schedule and limited space in the car. On the other hand, I want to be firm in my values for high-quality food to keep us healthy with the stress and travel of the holidays and avoid the tantrums associated with saying no to a toddler who cannot understand why they can't have all the Christmas cookies they want, particularly when their similar-aged cousins get as many as they wish. Despite numerous attempts to explain the reasons behind our choices, some family members still just don't get it and don't take us seriously since their kids turned out fine on standard American fare. There's little quotes around the word fine. Any advice for navigating this? We cannot feasibly host the gathering ourselves, and these people are important for my kids to visit regardless of our lifestyles, of how our lifestyles differ. I want to minimize the overall stress of the visits and maximize the enjoyment for everyone and not be too much of a burden to our family's hosts. The kids are not old enough to make choices for themselves, but they are old enough to recognize another child or grandparent with a cookie and want it. How much of a food policewoman should I be?
So I think it's up to individuals about what they should or shouldn't be or do. Like, I don't think that that's up to us to help you determine. I think it depends a lot on, you know, the age of your children and what their needs are and how sensitive they are to foods. I know for Sarah and I, our children have health-related conditions that are affected when our children eat certain kinds of foods. So those are taken completely off the table. And for each of my children, that's actually a little bit different, and it's the same for Sarah's as well. For me, how I would personally handle that situation is talk with the kids before we went. Even my three-year-old, like my two-year-old at the time, was able to kind of understand me saying, you know, we're going to go to grandpa's house and grandpa's going to have foods set out that we're not going to be able to eat. We brought this other thing that you can have. And when we leave, we can get something similar to what you saw either at home or later or, you know, on the road or whatever. If you know that Oreos and stuff are going to be offered, I think the more important thing that I would do if you feel like they are literally kind of sabotaging, which is a completely different mindset than just like it's out and it's hard to control. But if you feel sabotaged, I think that's where it gets really important in terms of having that open communication with those friends or family members to talk about how this is important to you, and therefore if they respect you or love you as a, you know, person or parent or whatever, that they need to have respect for what your parenting wishes are, and that this is only one portion of your overall parenting. You know, I've given the anomaly before about not letting your children do something that you wouldn't do outside the confines of food, like watching Schindler's List. And if your family thought that it was a good idea and showed it to them anyway, even though there might be value in that movie being educational, if you said no and you said it for a reason, that's your parenting choice. So, you know, I feel like it's really important to have that conversation. And if they say, you know, I just don't want them to miss out on whatever, that's an opportunity to discuss, okay, well, what other alternatives can we do where they won't, quote unquote, miss out on something? You know, you can bring your own almond flour, or you can do whatever it is that you want to do to maybe create some of those experiences. Trader Joe's makes gluten-free Oreo cookies. That's in no way paleo, but, you know, if your children are gluten intolerant and that's like the number one rule that you're sticking to for the holidays, then, you know, bring a box of Trader Joe's gluten-free Oreo cookies or something so that you're more prepared, perhaps. I hear what you're saying, though, in that if you're traveling, feeding any junk to your children more than is necessary can be a nightmare. I mean, I just finished talking earlier about how my children ate candy this morning and were a nightmare. And so I can't imagine that happening during a season where they're already on sensory overload from stimulation and toys and people, and then you throw food and not sleeping and travel into the mixture. You know, it's a recipe for disaster. So I think that the biggest thing for me is really, you know, planning ahead and communicating with the family and determining, you know, what really is it that's their goal? What are they trying to do? Are they trying to sabotage, or are they just trying to create some memories with your kids? And then you can have a great conversation with them about some alternative ways to do that, either with or without food.
That was awesome. You know, I think for me with my kids, you know, I don't have this issue with most of my family. If I am visiting family, where I know we're not going to be able to eat food that is safe for us, we bring all of our own food, or we plan to go visit them between meals and like leave before dinner is served. And I know that that's not always feasible, but that's one of the ways that we handle it. And, you know, if it's just a question of, like, it sounds like the treats are the thing that are the hardest to avoid. I mean, there's such a huge wealth of, you know, portable, you know, gluten-free, dairy-free, not paleo, but still gluten-free, dairy-free treats that look like Oreo cookies, look like, you know, chocolate chip cookies, that look like, you know, and taste really highly palatable to anybody. So, you know, Trader Joe's makes a bunch. If you go to Whole Foods, there's my Whole Foods has an entire, like, half of an aisle that's all products. We really like the Enjoy Life they've got a chewy cookie line and a crispy cookie line. My kids like the crispy cookies. And you can actually get them as individually wrapped cookies too, which automatically has portion control. And it's really easy to just stick one package, you know, in your purse to have for an emergency, or go for something like Larabars, like something that's still a treat for your kid, but that is doing that job of, you know, making them feel like they're getting something special when everyone else is. But that is also something that fits your criteria. And then, you know, the other option here is, you know, if your kids don't have noticeable reactions when they eat these foods, is to not worry about it. I mean, it kind of feels like something I'm not supposed to say because I'm trying to, you know, I'm the paleo mom and I'm not supposed to say, hey, maybe you could just go off plan for a few days. But you know, we all have really different individual tolerance. And if you're not noticing, symptoms that would make you concerned about what they're eating, and it's just a question of the philosophical aspect of it, then that's a perfectly valid choice. And I think you just need to think about what makes the most sense for you and your kids and your family and your particular family dynamics. And, you know, unfortunately we can't be, you know, group counselors over here on the Paleo View. That'd be cool if it could be.
I try my best.
So, good luck, Adrian, making that decision and navigating the holidays. It's definitely not easy when family doesn't get it. Okay, so we really don't have time for more questions, but we're going to do one more question anyways, because I think this is a pretty interesting question and one that we've gotten quite a few times. And I don't think we've ever actually talked about on the show. So Steve says, I am Catholic and it is a religious practice to break some bread during the ceremony. The ingredients for the sacramental bread are water, salt, eggs, yeast, sugar, more sugar, oil, and flour. And I have seen some without yeast. However, my question is this. If I am to follow paleo fully, would I need to not engage in this practice? Do I need to choose between a diseased life or a diseased afterlife? Assuming I do participate, how much damage is incurred by eating this one wafer? And how long would it take to correct? I appreciate your thoughts on this. And since I'm sending this around the holiday season, have a wonderful holiday season.
Okay.
Do you want me to jump in on the communal wafer?
That's fine. It doesn't say what kind of flour, and I have been under the impression and have responded to people who've asked me this specifically through our blog that oftentimes churches offer rice crackers. So I can assume from the list of ingredients she provided it's wheat flour, but it actually doesn't.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's wheat flour. There's a gluten-free communal wafer out there that is made with wheat starch and has some trace gluten, but it's extremely small amounts. And that's being offered as a gluten-free version. So I think that some churches are using rice crackers as an alternative, but there's other churches that believe that because it's not made with wheat, it doesn't conform to whatever the criteria is to take communion. So there's this other option that's made with wheat starch, and that's considered okay because it still is made with wheat. I think if you can have rice crackers as a substitute, then it's kind of like the best of both worlds, because rice is typically much, much, much less problematic than wheat, although some people can still have reactions to it. And then you kind of have you have all the benefits of the spiritual practice, as well as not eating a food that is damaging to the gut. Sort of the next step up from that would be the gluten-free wafers that are not truly gluten-free. And I think that, you know, I think that the question of, you know, is it, you know, the choice of, you know, eating something once a week, or, you know, or more frequently than that every day, that is a small amount, but that might be irritating the gut and hurting your physical body, versus the stress relief and the sense of peace that that spiritual practice can provide. I think that it becomes a really individual sliding scale for different people. And so, so when you talk about stress relief, that's really, really hugely important in life. And so I think that the best case scenario would be to find these gluten-free options. But then other than that, you know, I think it's a really an individual choice on, you know, the benefits that you're getting from the spiritual practice versus how it's actually damaging the gut. In terms of how much damage, that completely depends on individual tolerance or intolerance. So there's a lot of different ways that components in wheat can cause damage to the gut, and some of them require genetic susceptibility and some of them don't. So it really depends on your genetics and exactly what's going on in your body, how nutrient dense your diet is, how well managed your stress is, how much sleep you're getting, like all of those things feed into that equation. And in terms of how long it would take to heal, if you are not celiac and you're not having immune reactions to gluten, as little as 2 weeks to heal the more minor damage that gluten causes to everybody. If you are having the immune reaction, and if you are having celiac, you will not heal from it if you are continuing to do it. So so we actually know from studies that celiacs can be 5 years on a gluten-free diet and still have evidence of damage to their intestines. So so if you're still consuming it, you basically are never giving yourself the opportunity to heal. That's kind of a bummer to end on, huh?
It's been a very long show. Perhaps we can find something uplifting.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. Like we started the show. It could be like bookends.
The gift may be Sarah not singing on the show in the future.
All right. Comment on the show notes and tell me how goofy or not goofy you think my singing is.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We hope that we help you set your holidays off right. If you do happen to partake in some holiday festive food that you're not reacting to well, then we encourage you to check out our recovery show, which we did, I think, last year or the year before around the holiday season.
I think it was about last year.
So Monica can put that link in the show notes for you. And it would be about this time last year if you're looking just through iTunes or Stitcher or whatever. Next week is going to be a completely different topic show. So I don't know that we'll be covering this again other than I'm sure in news and views. But hope that everyone has a great holiday season, whatever you're happen to be celebrating. And we will talk to you again next week.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
You're rubbing your microphone.
Have I been doing that the whole time?
Just for the last, 2 minutes.
Oh, okay.
I think it's okay.
Matt, don't tell me I'm a bad human being. It's fine.
Yeah. I don't know if he'll actually do that. Will he? Is that what he does?
No.
Tells you you're a bad human being? That's like, no. That's like really, really sad and
that's
awful.
A joke.